I'm Chris Mandel, director of the Sedgwick Institute. Welcome to this installment of Sedgwick Institute Live, where I profile influential thought leaders who make a difference and whose interests lie in the risk and insurance world. Today, I'm talking to Sheila Small, recently retired vice president of risk management for Verizon and currently president of the Captive Insurance Group of New Jersey. With over 25 years of experience in the industry, Sheila has a wealth of knowledge, making Verizon one of the higher performing global risk programs when she was there. Welcome, Sheila.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to me this morning. So I like to start with the personal. So tell me a little bit about your family and what you are doing in your post-Verizon life.
Well, you know, I have four children, and they keep me very, very busy. I have four grandchildren, with one actually more on the way. And I just recently, actually this past Sunday, my third daughter got married. So my family life keeps me very, very busy. And I also try to do many of the things that I wasn't able to do while working full-time and raising four children. So pretty much that's, you know, what keeps me busy is, you know, doing some personal things, spending time with my family, watching my grandchildren. And also, I am the president of the Captive Insurance Group of New Jersey, which is a non-for-profit organization that supports the growth of the captive industry in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Well, four grandchildren and five ultimately is a lot of distraction for sure. In fact, you were with Alvarez for a while there. I know you pared that back, I guess, to devote more time to your family. That's awesome.
Yes, I was, after I left Verizon, I actually was asked to join the Alvarez & Marsal Insurance Risk Advisory Group, a team. It was a new business unit that they had just started, you know, a year or two earlier to my starting with them. And I was with them for 3.5 years, and I think, you know, my role there was to help them mold this organization, to attract other key players, you know, influential people in the risk management industry to come work for them. And after 3.5 years, you know, I think they were well on their way, and I felt that it was, you know, time for me to once again, you know, spend a little more time with my family. And, mm-hmm. and pursue the you know, my personal interests. I can't say it wasn't so much professional, but my personal interests. So this past December, I am still a senior advisor to them. So there will be potentially opportunities to work with them, but I don't see that happening too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. I think it's probably long overdue that you have that extra time to focus on what is a growing new family with your grandchildren. That's pretty cool. Well, let's turn to your career in the risk and insurance world. I know you spent most of it with Verizon and its predecessor companies. Give me just an overview of your career, particularly in the period when you did focus on risk management.
Well, I think I'd rather like to start in the beginning of my career, many, 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 many years ago. I actually was with Verizon or its predecessor companies for close to 40 years. And in the first 17 years, I was basically in their engineering, FP&A organization. And it wasn't until, I would say, almost my midlife change that I actually went out with my, I went on maternity leave with my fourth child. And many of the organizations that I had been working for were integrated out through downsizing. So when I was looking to come back to, at that time it was Bell Atlantic, I was asked to interview in the risk management department. I said to myself, I have no idea what you're even talking about. And at that time, you know, we were pretty much told that Verizon or Bell Atlantic didn't even buy insurance. I was also scratching my head. But I went for the interview and was offered the position within literally under 24 hours. And for me, it was a change of career, and it was an amazing, awesome change of career. And that's how I got into it. And I came in at director level. So I had to rely very, very heavily on the people who were working for me, make sure that, you know, they were happy with their new director, and also get them to teach me, you know, almost everything I got to learn over the following years, them and the brokers and the TPA. So I can say that my education in risk management really came from the people around me, and then subsequently from getting my ARM and my CPCU.
Mm-hmm. So I might as well bring this up just for the listeners' benefit, because I always thought it was interesting. But as you know, I was with Bell Atlantic back in the day myself. I came in from the Marsh organization to help them build their first risk management operation in those first 5 years after the breakup of AT&T, which would have been basically 85 to 89, 90. So you and I never crossed paths then, but I decided to move on, and I think it wasn't probably too far from there where you entered the risk management field and became the leader of that organization. That's a very interesting coincidence, isn't it?
It certainly is. And you said you're right on the timing. I became the risk manager of Bell Atlantic in September of 1990. It was a very moment.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so your timing is absolutely right. So what happened was, and I mentioned how my job sort of got basically integrated out before, is we did the divestiture. It was in 1984, February of 84, Bell Atlantic became a group of, group of companies, operating telephone companies, and it took about 5 years for them to establish a regional headquarters in Arlington, Virginia. So the role I had at New Jersey Bell at the time, in 1989, got integrated into a group in Arlington, Virginia, and that's how I basically didn't have a job to come back to when I came back from my maternity leave. So, and that's how I ended up in risk management. And I often say, to this day, I often say that, you know, having that fourth child really made the difference, because if I had not gone out on maternity leave, I probably would have ended up in some very boring, you know, customer service type job at New Jersey Bell. And would never have been able to see and accomplish what I did in risk management. So I am forever grateful to my son for being born so that I could have this opportunity.
Yeah, that's the way a lot of people feel about the discipline, you know, myself included. I mean, I started in the claim world, did a little bit of brokerage, and, you know, then when I realized what risk management was, I just kind of fell for it and decided that was the thing I wanted to do. So, yeah, it's an interesting history for us all. So I know, and I should have mentioned this up front, you were risk manager of the year. Well, I think it was 2003, right?
That is correct.
So, but apart from that, Sheila, what's been the most significant accomplishment in your career so far?
You know, I think it really sort of stems from, you know, winning the risk manager of the year. To me, that was an incredible honor to receive. And as I know you were risk manager of the year, you probably felt the same way. And but the reason there were two really reasons that I think were accomplishments that, you know, people, the judges noted, that sort of made me win. And that was the 9/11 claim. You know, Verizon had a huge 9/11 claim, unfortunately. And just like the airlines, we were impacted in every location that the planes went down. We had facilities in the Pentagon. Part of, you know, the World Trade Center fell on one of our buildings, so we had huge holes in our building in New York on West Street. And then even the plane that went down in Shanksburg, Pennsylvania, had our Airphone equipment in it. So we had, you know, a large encompassing claim, and we were able to settle that claim literally on the 2-year anniversary of 9/11 for hundreds of millions of dollars, and we were the largest non-litigated settlement at that time. I don't know what happened subsequently. And I think, and that was really, and it was not easy. The lawyers were all over me, sort of saying, we're gonna lead this charge. You know, this is not, you know, this is too big for risk management to lead this, you know, claim handling. And mm-hmm. I had just settled a large hurricane claim, and I turned to them, and luckily I had the support of upper management, I said, let me lead this. If I need you, you will be right behind us. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get the support of, you know, senior management to allow me to do that, because this is, like I say, this was hundreds of millions of dollars of a claim.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think being able to, and we settled it, everybody seemed relatively happy. There were some major decisions that had to be made on the way that I was able to convince, you know, senior management that this was the right, you know, this, you know, if you have choice A and B, let's go with choice A. And I think at the end they all agreed that that was the right decision. So mm-hmm. that was one of my, you know, I think that was one of the more significant accomplishments. I felt very, very proud of, you know, unfortunately it was not a good situation, but for us it ended up, you know, it was, you know, getting it done in under 2 years, without having to go through years and years of litigation, I think was a significant accomplishment. So that was one.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I was very, very proud of was how I handled and grew our captive that I inherited when Bell Atlantic and NYNEX merged. It was a very mm-hmm. small, you know, one or two programs, had just been really started. And I took that captive to be one of the largest in the country. And one that...
Where was it domiciled?
It was domiciled in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically became a significant for-profit maker for the company.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
it also, just handled, you know, we just put in a lot of programs. It became the milestone of our entire risk management program at Verizon.
Mm.
You know, over 75% of our premiums went into the captive and stayed there.
Mm. And you were making money, so you must have been selling third-party insurance, phone protection?
For the cell phones, right. And that program, I launched that program.
Mm-hmm.
I actually was part of I talked to the wireless people. I convinced them that this is something we should do. It took a while, but they finally, you know, came around. And I did the RFP on that program. And I launched that program, and I managed that program really. And I managed the program from the risk management side in conjunction with the wireless people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was more the underwriter. You know, I can't say I wasn't the product development person, but I was the underwriter, and we worked hand in hand to have. That was not a successful program in the beginning. You need to know that. That was a very sick program in the beginning, but through a lot of work and changes and modifications and understanding and worked very closely with the TPA, it has become a very successful and really integral part of the whole wireless business.
Was that the first cell phone insurance program through a captive?
No, there were others. But none of the others were either successful either.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, 9/11, back to that, was... you know, changed a lot of people's worlds and lives, you know, and so particularly in the risk world, lots of things seems to have changed. You know, we had to finally start thinking about what was really possible, not just what was really likely, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people have gone down the ERM road and the strategic risk road and integrated risk and all kinds of other things. I don't know where you might have gone, but what's your view of the risk discipline? Even though I know you've been out of it directly for a few years, what's your view of it now and its future?
I am encouraged, and I think a lot of the younger people have a lot more analytical tools in their toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot more risk in the world, you know, whether it's, you know, data breaches, even the global warming. I think I see this discipline still, you know, growing and changing, just as it did when I was in it. Like, I always used to say, what's really incredible about risk management is that every day you come in, it's a new day. And I don't see that really changing. I can't really predict. I mean, I think of the robots, the wireless drive, wireless cars, or the driverless cars. I mean, it's this whole area of risk and the risk discipline changes, you know, every day. I can't predict what is going to be the hot item, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now. I just know that it is, you know, every day it's different. And every day it changes, and that's what makes it so exciting.
So what do you think the few skills are that matter most for succeeding in risk management?
Sorry, say that again.
What skills do you think matter the most to succeed in risk management?
I still believe it's a people business. And, you know, I hear of people telling me how some of their children, you know, say they don't have to go outside anymore because they can meet all their friends online. I think it's still a people business. You need to talk to people. You need to, you know, because I think you always learn from people when you talk to them. And so I think personal skills are very, very important. And and I think, you know, you can't, I think collaborative skills are important. I think sort of knowing what's going on in the world is important. You know, I to be honest, I think one of the key things is that, you know, talking to people, understanding what's going on, talking to within your own company, what sort of keeps them up at night, I think is really, really important.
So one of the things that I'm involved in and Cedric cares about a lot is, you know, attracting people into the business, our business in particular, of course. But I think, as I mentioned to you earlier, you know, I'm speaking on recruitment in the captive world here at SECA coming up in the next week. But I'm interested in your thoughts about what advice you might give university students who might be thinking about this industry and the risk profession.
I think the profession is a little more well-known than it was 20 years ago. And, you know, I have had the opportunity to speaking to, you know, college students in whether it's the risk management, you know, fraternity or society. And those who are in it really are very excited about it. And I think, you know, I think that's still, you know, the only way we can get that word out to more people.
I mean, we probably both had the same view when we were in school, right? We didn't know or hear much about insurance. I think to the extent today students hear about insurance, they still say, why would I want to go into that industry?
They think of life insurance. But I think in some cases the fact that they're like calling it risk management is very helpful.
Right, right. We just need more insurance, or rather risk management majors. I mean, we've got probably 50 or 60 of them around the country, but still the average B school doesn't have a risk major, may only have a couple of insurance-related courses, and may not even be able to spell risk management as a discipline. At least that's been my experience.
I don't disagree, although, you know, I understand that that is going to be one of the biggest challenges for the insurance company. There's a lot of people who will be retiring over the next 5 or 10 years. You hear that in many of the conferences. And how do you backfill those jobs? I think that insurance companies have trouble keeping people, you know, whether it's, you know, maybe not the appropriate training or whatever. I understand that the turnover rate is quite high. And, you know, so we need to, you know, the insurance industry and the, you know, broker industry need to think about how we, you know, what kind of training, what kind of jobs do we give to these people that they will at least stay for the long run? Because if they do stay for the long run, I'm positive that they will be happy that they made that decision.
Yeah, I agree. Couldn't agree more. So, you know, Cedric, as you well know, is in the claim management business. We're a TPA, and I always have to ask people like you, what you think about what we do and how important is what TPAs do to the success of risk managers and their strategies.
I think the world today is into so much more, the world today is so much more into like analytics and, you know, understanding the data. And I think TPAs are first and foremost in the forefront of that. So I believe that they are, you know, very important to, you know, successful risk management strategies. You know, they're the ones who have the analytics. They have the tools. They have the software. It takes a large investment, and, you know, and they've concentrated on that and they focused on that. And I think without that, it would be very difficult for risk managers to really, you know, be able to mine their data on their own. They just don't have the capital investment to be able to do that. So, and I think, if anything, I think TPAs who were just before claim handlers are now becoming even more important because they're doing data analytics. They're trying to, you know, money is scarce, capital is scarce, and they can be extremely helpful to identify the areas that are going to give you the, you know, the best bang for your buck.
And, of course, TPAs, claim handlers, insurance companies, they have the data, right? I mean, our database is huge.
Exactly.
And I won't mind admitting we get a lot of high expectations from our clients about the use of their data.
And I think that's, I mean, they don't have the data, you know, or if they do, it's a little bit, it's very recent and they only have their own data. You have data across different organizations. I mean, it just doesn't make sense for the risk management departments to, in, you know, to invest in, you know, in money and to do the data, because you have, the TPAs have the data, they don't.
Exactly. So you're president of the Captive Insurance Group of New Jersey, and you've talked about your extensive captive operation and experience at Verizon. What are your thoughts about the future of the captive industry?
I think the captive industry is still growing. I think there's a little bit of a like a road barrier at the moment for the smaller captives, and that is the IRS. The larger captives, the Fortune, you know, 500, Fortune 1000, we know that most of them who want to have captives and they're being, you know, handled appropriately. I think the new market is for the middle market, the mom and pops, the smaller industry, who are starting to just realize how integral a captive could be to their risk management program. However, you know, I think there's right now a little bit of a disconnect between the, you know, captive industry and the IRS, or better yet, Congress, who says this is a good idea for small companies to have captives, and the IRS sort of saying, we don't think these are premiums at all. Now, granted, there might be some third-party vendors who are steering captive, potential captive owners down the wrong trail. But so there's a lot of uncertainty at this point. There are several outstanding IRS cases that of captives, and until some of those findings or the rulings come out, I think people are still uncertain as to what is the next step in the captive arena in the middle market. And I don't know when that, when those rulings come out, I think it's going to be extremely helpful.
Yeah. Of course, that implies that there's a tax strategy, right, for the captive and captives in question. I'm hearing, as I interact with the industry, that the tax strategy or the tax angle is actually either not a part of their priorities or non-existent, other than obviously complying with the law. But, you know, it used to be that there was some pretty aggressive tax strategies for captives to ostensibly not avoid taxes, but, yeah, I mean, minimize paying taxes, which is perfectly legal. But that's what I think got the IRS all worked up. My only hope is that now we've got a new administration, maybe, you know, they'll be a little more accommodating with the interests of captives as they become, what I'm hearing is more ERM captives and the interest in micro captives and some of these other variations.
Right. I mean, I actually was an expert witness on two of the captive cases against the IRS. So I have an intimate understanding and knowledge of what the, you know, the IRS stated and what, you know, and what mm-hmm. the captive was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, until, and the first case was literally a year and a half ago, if
mm-hmm.
not longer, and we're still waiting for the official ruling from the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And until we get those official rulings, it's really, you know, I think a lot of people are, who want to start captives are sort of standing on the sidelines, sort of waiting to see what they say, because they don't want to get into a situation where they have to have back taxes and penalties. So until, I think once those rulings come out, whether and no matter how they come out, it's okay. People will just have guidelines as to what is
mm-hmm.
allowed and what is not allowed.
Right. Yeah, I don't think it's going to diminish the industry at all, one way
no.
or another. But
right.
All right.
Just
well,
people have better
so
guidelines.
What are your plans? So what are
your
plans,
plans
for next phase of your working life, or are you kind of, as you said earlier, winding down?
Well, you know, I still want to stay involved. I still stay in touch with, you know, a lot of my insurance friends and, you know, coworkers. And, you know, I'm staying in, you know, in, you know, with the captive insurance group. I plan to, you know, continue on as the, you know, director of that organization. And, you know, who knows? Who knows? You know, I'm not going to say anything definitive at this point that, you know, I will, you know, be sort of slowly weaning myself off of the entire industry. Because
mm-hmm.
you just never know what an opportunity, you know, what kind of opportunity will come along. I am still an advisor at Alvarez. And, in fact, I have told them specifically that if there is another case like this IRS, you know, captive against an IRS, that I would definitely serve, if asked, as an expert witness again.
Oh, very good.
So, and there very likely is going to be another case or two. So I'm not going to be totally
yeah.
out of, you know, out of pocket. But, you know, I still plan to go to the captive conferences. I'm planning to go to RIMS. And
you're
going to
make New Jersey the biggest U.S. domicile for captives, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I, you know, the way, you know, and as you know, Chris, you know, this, the captive insurance group in New Jersey requires, you know, what we do is we do educational sessions for people who are interested in the captive industry in New Jersey. So that immediately forces me to sort of stay in touch with people, you know, to get them to be speakers and things like that. So I still feel involved, but not, you know, pretty much more on my time schedule
mm-hmm.
and you know, not on an everyday you know, plan, which is sort of what I wanted. You know, I'd like to be able to have more time for myself to spend time with my family and my grandchildren, as I said before.
Yep, I get it.
And travel right. and other things.
Absolutely. Well, we're almost out of time. Anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
Basically, once again, I think it's an incredible discipline. It's an incredible career. And I think the listeners, anybody who's in the risk management field, should consider themselves lucky that they are there, because it's very exciting. You meet the most incredible people, and I think that is one of the things that I've enjoyed the most of my time in risk management, is the people that I've met and have the ability to interact with.
Yeah, I agree. There's good people in this industry.
Definitely.
Well, thanks, Sheila, for your time and your insights. It's been a pleasure talking with you today.
Thank you.
To my listeners, you can find my speaking and writing schedule, as well as those of our senior fellows at the Institute, Dr. Rick Victor and Bill Zachary, at www.sedgwickinstitute.com. Please consider joining the Institute's LinkedIn group titled Sedgwick Institute, where we dialogue daily on issues of importance to stakeholders in the risk and insurance world. Till next month, when we'll have our next installment of SI Live, when I'll be interviewing my very own boss, Dave North, President and CEO of Sedgwick. In the meantime, I urge you to use your expertise and influence to make a difference whenever and wherever you can to make this industry better.